You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
All right, take two, Joe. I'm sorry. As I was describing my my poor setup here, some audio went on in the background of my mic. I didn't know if it was picking that up. But like I said, we met this morning or got connected this morning. You're now meeting face-to-face. You just released a 38-minute video to try to break Bitcoin down from first principles for beginners. What's the problem? And I think the problem that you're trying to solve in terms of a one-touch piece of content or education that would help people fall down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and be compelled to learn more is really enticing. But before we dive into what's the problem, the story of Satoshi versus Fiat Tello and what happens on this island that the civilization gets stranded on, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to become passionate about this particular problem of educating people about Bitcoin?
Sure. Right. Well, I guess you start at the beginning, but Marty, I'm the danger of turning into a monologue. So just interject and tell me and steer me a little bit here. I'm based in the UK. Grew up in Yorkshire, around the north of England. I studied physics at university, and then went on to become an equity derivatives trader, initially at Goldman Sachs, and then spent 10 years in the city, at Morgan Stanley and UBS for the last few years, and subsequently went on to found a sports modeling quant engineering business, which was producing modeling football, so soccer for you guys, from an algorithmic perspective, producing automated models and pricing systems, supplying those to bookmakers. And then we were ultimately acquired by our biggest customer. That was in 2018-19. And then spent the last 5-6 years growing, helping to grow that business from a sort of national champion to a global player. And on the way, found Bitcoin in 2020, very similar time to a lot of other people. And then had the opportunity to take a step out of that business last year now, we're in 2025 now. Now I'm focused entirely on thinking about how to further the adoption of Bitcoin in a variety of ways. And so that's super high level, and you're happy to dig into any part of that you wish.
Well, let's dig into it. I mean, just broadly speaking, based off of the resume you just listed there, it seems like you've been in the business of managing risk for quite some time. And I think that's how many Bitcoiners view Bitcoin as a way to manage the risk of currency debasement. So was it the risk aspect, the risk-adjusted potential of Bitcoin that drew you to it? Or was it understanding problems in the world of risk that you were involved in and how systemic the risk may be that drew you to it?
Yeah, I think you've honed in on it there. Like, my entire career has been managing risk in various different forms. And even from a sort of personal perspective and interest perspective, that has always been where I was drawn to. I always wanted to be a bookie growing up. You know, I used to work in the betting shops in Yorkshire and things like that. And so, you know, it was always around, you know, having a good sense of risk versus reward. And, you know, that carried through my journey from university to work, because, you know, I was interested in derivatives, because it was never, it's not about gambling. you know, when people think about taking risk and things, it's not about gambling. Gambling has never, doesn't interest me. I like watching sports, you know, but I'd rather not have money on the sport, you know, have a little bet or something like that. But it's purely just for interest sake. The risk reward comes from, you know, you want to sharpen your skills and be able to take the right risks at the right time and appropriately size what it is you're risking based on your confidence of the outcome. And Bitcoin just blows everything else out of the water. I mean, it is just the biggest asymmetrical bet of all time. And, you know, in 2020, I came, you know, everyone's got these touch points about Bitcoin and, you know, somebody told me about it and whatever. And there have been various points, but I was inside the system. And, you know, when you're much like the Croesus article that he wrote about why the Yuppies don't get, the Yuppie elite don't get Bitcoin. When you're inside the system, you just, it's beyond your sort of mental model to think that something exists outside that you're not aware of because you've been taught and everybody you interact with operates in this system and this is just how the world works. And even finding Bitcoin in 2020, it was found from that perspective. You know, much like, you know, the rest of the world, I was stuck at home listening to podcasts, things, and at that time, I was actually listening to a lot of Real Vision. And this was in a previous incarnation of Real Vision before, you know. And, you know, Raoul Powell was going through that similar sort of discovery around Bitcoin. Obviously, he'd come across it earlier, but was really sort of digging in, asking those questions at that time. And I felt like we were going through it at a similar stage. But even then, it was from a trade perspective. It's like, you know, you've got fixed supply, you've got this demand, and it was, you know, almost mechanical. But then when you get into it, you realize, yeah, that's part of the story, but that's like missing the biggest, almost like the biggest piece. And so you end up coming into Bitcoin through that risk reward high level view. But then when you dig into it, you realize it just changes everything. And so not only is it the same, not only is it have the risk reward you thought, but it's even better. It's even better because what the financial markets don't understand is that once you've walked through that door, that you're never going back, ever. And so it's unlike any other asset that's ever existed. And so, you know, I'm monologuing here, Marcy, but it's like, you know, when people, and it touches on MicroStrategy and things like this as well. When the price goes up, the financial markets think people are going to sell. That's just not how it works. That's not how it works with Bitcoin. You know, I've gone through that inflection point, and I'm sure you have as well, where like I go to bed at night worrying I don't have enough, not that I have too much, right? And getting annoyed when the price goes up and smiling when it dips 10%. You know, it's you reach that sort of point and you know that you're not the only one, right? There is an increasing number of these people all around the world. And when you overlay that mentality and that level of conviction on top of that risk reward from a mechanical perspective of Bitcoin, is that all bets are off. It's not a question of when, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. It's a very long way of answering your question, but it's I think my whole career has led me to landing on Bitcoin is just the greatest asymmetrical trade of all time. And now there's just nothing else worth working on.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's incredible context for the background, how you came to Bitcoin. As you're explaining it and walking through it, I couldn't help but think of a couple of things. Number one is, would like to get your perspective on how risk broadly in traditional markets, global markets, is mispriced right now because of money, and particularly how central banks and governments can manipulate it. And then number two, to your last point about hodlers not wanting to sell, I think now as it stands in 2025, I'm not sure if you've read Stoneridge's annual letter from Ross Stevens this year, but it's becoming even easier for people who do have the conviction not to sell as we get products, whether it be commercial real estate credit products. I think eventually residential mortgage products will come to market. We've already seen Bitcoin collateralized lending desks. Now we've got lending products using insurance premiums to drive down that borrowing cost for Bitcoin holders. And now heading into 2025, heading into Bitcoin's 16th year of existence, the ability for people with the conviction to not have to sell and just use their Bitcoin as collateral to borrow is only getting easier. And I think that adds a variable to the price volatility that has existed historically that has not entered the market the first 15 years. Now it's much easier for hodlers to hold and apply the whole buy, borrow, die playbook to this asset, which I don't think many people really appreciate yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm slightly flippant when I say like nobody's going to sell when the price goes up, because of course people will. You know, the priorities are their families and things like that. So we still live, you know, in a fiat world, you know, for now. And so, you know, some people take some money off the table to improve their family's life, pay down the mortgage and these sorts of things. But you're right, we're reaching that stage of maturation, really, in the ecosystem around Bitcoin, the asset, which gives people much more flexibility, I think, to think about this as being a core piece of their long-term estate, right? And managing the risks around that for the long-term good of their family. And so, you know, the development of these new products and, you know, collateralized lending facilities, things like that, which is great. It's sort of drifting more towards the standard products that you would have in existing financial markets when it comes to, you know, lending against private shares and things like this, for example, which is obviously great. Yeah. I haven't read Stoneridge's article though, so apologies on that one.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC.
So, freaks, this is a read you don't want to skip. Everyone knows about Fold. You know about Fold. It's the app where you can earn the most Bitcoin rewards for everyday purchases. But here's the kicker. Fold now lets you double stack rewards with gift cards. Use your credit or debit card to buy gift cards and earn both credit card rewards and sats, from groceries at Instacart or Kroger to home upgrades at Lowe's or Home Depot. Maybe you want to get takeout. You like Uber Eats and DoorDash. Maybe you want to go on a trip. You're using Airbnb or Southwest and everything else on Amazon. Fold gift cards help you grow your stack with every purchase. If you're not shopping with Fold gift cards, you're leaving sats on the table. It's as simple as that. Don't leave sats on the table. Go sign up for the Fold app. New users get a 20,000 sat welcome bonus with their first gift card purchase. Don't leave sats on the table. I'm going to stress that. Go sign up now at foldapp.com/Marty.
There we go. Sorry about that.
I had no worries.
Had to push my laptop closer to the hotel to pick up the Wi-Fi in full strength. But I lost you when you're saying you haven't finished or read the Stone Ridge letter yet. But I think the point stands is the ability for Bitcoin to be kept off the market and really crunch that supply demand dynamic that exists is only increasing from here. And it seems like traditional finance people are beginning to wake up to it. Obviously, we had the ETFs last year. We've got the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve being talked about at the federal level here in the United States. You mentioned MicroStrategy. I think it will be interesting to see how quickly the traditional finance world wakes up to this risk-adjusted opportunity that exists in Bitcoin. I think that's what's really great about what's the problem and what you're doing to try to educate people is that most people don't even recognize that there's a problem in the first place, which is insane to think, especially for people in traditional finance who are supposed to be in this world of money making and managing risks. Many don't understand what money is at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I would add something to that, in that I think people know something's wrong because they can feel it. They can feel that things are not moving in the right direction. You know, life is becoming more challenging, but pinpointing why that is the case is very, very hard, especially when you are being told it's this or it's that or it's them or it's, you know, in the media, for example, and you're, you know, the cause and effect is obfuscated. It makes it very, very hard for the everyday person who doesn't have the financial background or has done the, you know, 1,000 hours of, you know, Austrian economics and understanding the banking system and listening to Lindholm and you know, all these different things to really piece that together. And, you know, I think, I certainly hope what's the problem helps people with that. You know, it's not Marty, it was an accidental creation, in all honesty. I don't see myself as, I'm not prioritizing trying to educate people, but it's something I've created and was then encouraged to do something with because it was effective. I'm just so glad to have it out there, and the initial reception has been amazing. Like, some of the comments, you know, I'm very happy being in the background. I've never, you know, posting stuff is quite, I'm sure I overlap a lot with a lot of your audience, is not where I would like to be in the spotlight. Happy to be behind the scenes figuring stuff out. So it's been an uncomfortable sort of 24 hours putting this out there, and, you know, but I'm made up with the comments. Just the people who've watched it so far, you know, the fact they're going to share it with their friends and like, this is the missing piece for them. This just makes it worthwhile. Delighted. Thank you for having me on to talk about it. So a welcome surprise at the end of the day.
Well, Let's jump in. What compelled you to make the presentation in the first place? Was this something just for friends and family? Was it, exercise and first principles for yourself?
Well, it was for friends. I got, you know, most of us end up, and you're slightly different because, you know, you put out the newsletter, and so you're constantly thinking about taking what's in your head and putting it on a piece of paper and communicating it to other people. And so that process is a fairly regular one for you. I'd expect also in preparing for your podcasts and guests and all of these different things. But for most of us, I suspect it's not. And so you carry this jumble of knowledge and conviction and insight in your head, but you're never really forced to get it down into some tangible form. And I was invited about 3 months ago by a friend, for a weekend a way where he'd invited about 15 people from his, you know, his life, who all shared sort of entrepreneurial background, to go and hang out together. You know, we'll talk about stuff, we'll have a good time, but everyone brings something to talk about. So, you know, you can then share it with everybody else. But I didn't know anybody else going, only knew my friend. And I was like, what am I going to go talk about? You know, my first thought was, oh God, I'm going to have to stand up in front of 15 people I don't know and talk about something, you know. But I was like, well, the only thing I actually want to talk about is Bitcoin. And so, but I didn't know who else, didn't know whether anybody else going, A, knew Bitcoin, and then B, to what extent they knew Bitcoin. And so I, you know, had to sit down and think, like, what am I actually going to go and talk to them about? And so I ended up having to strip it back and be like, well, if I'm only going to talk for half an hour, I should try and set a nearer term target. In half an hour, can I get them to want to learn about Bitcoin? Because in half an hour, I can only communicate so much about Bitcoin. So if I do it that way, then it can appeal to everybody, regardless of whether anybody in the room has actually heard of it before. And so, by constraining the problem, I then thought about, like, how do I get this down? Like, what are the key things that I actually want to communicate? And then I ended up creating this story, which makes it, with the idea of trying to make it accessible to absolutely everybody. And so, you know, since doing that presentation, to coming back, you know, I've done it for various different people. I've done it for my mother-in-law. She's in her 70s, you know, and she gets it. You know, but it was amazing. I was just delighted with the way it went, because you just see people's eyes pop. Like, they have these aha moments, you know, as you go through it. Because, I mean, to give your, and hopefully we can put the video in the show notes, Marty, so people can go ahead and watch it. But I wanted it so that anybody watching it, as long as you're a human being with some life experience, I can identify a set of issues up front that they're familiar with, that affect them. And there's, you know, maybe one or two, or there could be lots. And then showing them that actually, you know, you're confused about where all these things come from, and you think they're all separate. You know, so, you know, the cost of living, obesity, homelessness, breakdown of the family unit, you know, forever wars, all of these things, that they all share one root cause, and that's the quality of the money. So, like, locking that in up front and then taking them on a journey through a story where at each stage they're sort of thinking through the logic for themselves and being given a mental framework around which to think about where the issues come from without mentioning Bitcoin at all. And then at the very end, sort of coming back to revealing that actually, you know, Bitcoin is the solution to all of these, to the underlying problem. And the underlying problem here is the quality of the money. And that's because it can be changed, and it has been changed. And we can dig into, you know, a little bit of the aspects of the story there, but It really works nicely.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite, and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth.
You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
Yeah, no, I think the release of What's the Problem is a bit serendipitous because I literally have this book that I've been reading on this trip, The Power of Personal Storytelling, like spinning tales to connect with other people. And that's one thing I think Bitcoiners historically, first 15 years, it's really, you're explaining Bitcoin, you're talking about historical things and trying to highlight the technical details and the mechanics of the system as it works. But I think humans inherently really react to stories much more passionately than somebody like myself explaining technical and mechanical details of what Bitcoin is. And that's, I'm about three chapters into this book, and that's something I'm trying to personally get better at, is storytelling. And I think, again, serendipitous that you dropped this incredible story to sort of plant the seed in people's minds.
Well, I look forward to your newsletter taking a more fairy tale sort of bent going forward. But it's right. Like, if you think about the evolution of Bitcoin and the education around Bitcoin, like, we started out like with the white paper, and for people to grasp Bitcoin and the implications of that is a giant leap from just reading the white paper back then. And then, you know, over time, there's been more and more layers sort of built on those foundations where it becomes more accessible to a greater number of people, but it's still a relatively small surface area. It's like the cypherpunks, and then thinking about the, you know, the political aspects of it, and the governance, and then the financial aspects and things like this. It's still relatively inaccessible for your everyday person who doesn't have a background in any of those things, especially when they're absolutely not taught any of the critical thinking around this within the existing system to even realize that there is an issue. And then, you know, over time, we've had more and more great literature, more and more accessible literature created on top of that, you know, the Bitcoin Standard, and then, you know, the Price of Tomorrow and Broken Money and all of these things. It becomes more and more accessible over time. And the leap that people have to make becomes smaller at each stage. And, you know, we grow the bubble, we grow the Bitcoin bubble, but like, there's still a big gap. There's still a big gap for people, especially outside of certain personality type subsets, you know, to engage or have the motivation or the understanding about why they should even engage, why this is even relevant. And, you know, I've tried to orange pill a lot of people, and you have more success with some than others. You share books, you share videos, you try to talk to them about it, but it's like you said, we tend to approach it from one or two certain directions. And it's like, how do we try and make it as big as possible or as welcoming as possible to get people to the starting line to want to learn? And stories are a great way of doing that. Really great way of doing that. I'm not a natural storyteller, but, you know, thankfully, you know, AI is at a level now that I was able to create this presentation. And you've seen it, a lot of the viewers won't have seen it, but it's, you know, the content could be quite depressing, perhaps, because you're just basically in a world where everything just keeps getting worse. But it's wrapped in that soft, cuddly Pixar animation overlay, which sort of makes it a lot more accessible. And I think what I've certainly found in talking to people is that it sets off the light bulb in a range of people that you wouldn't expect necessarily if you were talking to them about Bitcoin. It's because it connects to people's lives, and they understand they see that connection and they buy into the story. You know, when that penny drops, there's some just, you know, there's one slide especially, and you'll have seen it, which is the flow diagram. But, you know, Vitello presses the big red button and then, you know, things start going wrong, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. And people just really identify because they see these things. You're like, oh, Jesus, I never knew this is where it came from. You know, that those moments, and especially women as well, because, you know, we don't have as many women in the Bitcoin community as we should. And this is something which seems to resonate really well across, you know, both men and women, which is great.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's been a conversation on this trip that I'm on with a couple of other Bitcoiners, and brought our wives with us, and the wives conversing, talking about the fact that we all have children, and the fact that money has gotten to the point where it's hard for people to raise families, and more importantly, mothers, to be with their children because they're forced to enter the workforce and do the 9-to-5. And then many are forced to put their children in daycare or hire an expensive nanny and not really spend that quality time with their children in their most formative years. And I think that is one of the, at least for my wife and couple of the other wives that are here, the conversations I've ever heard is one of the things they're most excited for Bitcoin's overall impact, is just giving mothers that quality time with their children back.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been conditioned now as a society to be very much moving in one direction, set of expectations that, you know, both parents should be working, and you know, there is, every family needs to make those choices, but they should be choices. They shouldn't be forced. But we're on the wrong side of the line right now because of the fiat system. And, you know, Bitcoin solves a lot of things. This being one of them. Marty, would it be helpful for me to outline, I'm guessing because a lot of the viewers won't have seen the video yet, to give a high level summary of the videos, the structure, because then, you know, my hope for the video is for it to become a tool in the arsenal of Bitcoiners, because there won't be anything in the video that somebody who's been in Bitcoin for a number of years will go, you know what, I didn't know that. But the way that it's delivered, and the structure of it, I think, is unique amongst the Bitcoin material that we have available to us today. But my hope is that,
yeah, I would love that.
Now the Bitcoiners end up using this to send to people who haven't had the penny drop yet. And so if they understand what's in there, they can watch it themselves, understand that this is actually a pretty potent thing that they can then leverage. And hopefully bring more people to want to learn about Bitcoin, to then ask them for that first podcast or that first video or that first book, which is really, you know, where I would love this to land.
Yeah, and I'll tee you up. I think the way you started the video and started the story, more importantly, is this idea of an advanced civilization that had already progressed and reached a level of success and quality of life that has their ship crash, and the survivors are forced to rebuild civilization with the end goal in mind, fresh in their minds of what they know they can build, but they have to figure out how to go from zero to getting back to where they were.
Yeah. Okay, great. So maybe I'll just spend a couple of minutes just literally whizzing through that at the high level story arc so that people have an idea. It really starts with listing problems that people see in their lives today, like a whole myriad of issues, and then trying to get people to identify that, you know, with one or two different things, and then saying that these are really share a cause, and that's the quality of the money. And then say, well, like this, I'm going to take you through a story here. I'm not going to lecture you about Bitcoin. This is, you know, at this point, you don't even know it's about Bitcoin. You just know it's called What's the Problem? And there's a guy, there's a Pixar guy on the front page with a big red button. So that's all you know. And so, yeah, it's, the story is there's a shipwreck. Hundreds of smart people get washed up on an island. They come from a, you know, advanced civilization, so they know where they need to get back to, but they're starting from zero. And so the very first thing they need to figure out is like, what are they going to use as money on this brand new island? And, you know, you have to suspend your disbelief that they can create whatever monetary system they want with whatever characteristics. But then the question is, you know, what makes good money? And when I gave this presentation to these guys in Portugal, you know, I had a sea of blank faces staring back at me because, you know, most people have never really thought about what makes good money, you know. But then there's, you go through the seven characteristics, you know, that we all know, to sort of set the scene. And then they go, okay, well, we're not just going to make good money. We're going to make the perfect money. And the perfect money basically describes Bitcoin, right? Without saying Bitcoin. And so, you know, you go, great, they create the perfect money. But then there's a disagreement. Two leaders emerge from the island, and one called Satoshi, who's like, he says, well, these are the characteristics of perfect money. And we all agree on that. So why would you ever change them? And then someone else called Fiatello, he goes, well, okay, well, yeah, I get that. But what if there's an emergency? Like, what if the people we put in charge of the money feel the need to change something? I think we should have the perfect money, but we should also have a big red button that we can press and change any aspect of the perfect money if we need to. Of course, no one will ever press it, of course, but we'll have it there just in case. And then, you know, Satoshi cannot get on board with this idea. So there's a big disagreement. They build a massive wall down the middle of this island. And on one side, they create Satoshis, and the other side, they create Fiatellos, and they're both identical to start with. And it's perfect money on both sides. And then it takes the next stage as well. There is nothing. So everyone's starting from scratch, and everyone's living, trying to figure out how to survive. And then, you know, they're doing their own fishing, they're doing their own cutting down of the wood, building their own shelters. But it's really inefficient. Nobody's really trading because everyone's living hand to mouth and these various things. And then there's, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of taking you through the formation of a free market where people begin to specialize because then they're better at doing some things than others. And you introduce the idea of competition because there are lots of people on the ship, and that when people specialize, prices start to fall, quality starts to increase, and then there's active trading and there's perfect money. And then the consequence is, you know, and you also have investment innovation, which then drives further quality of life improvements. But what happens to the money is that the money starts to increase in value. The purchasing power of the money starts to increase. So nobody has to take undue risk with their capital. They still lend it out, but they don't have to. They keep the money themselves. They don't have to have somebody looking after the money for them. But the quality of life for everybody improves because of the productivity of everybody, even for the people who are not productive in the society. And this happens on both sides of the island. And so, you know, it's really The Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth in, you know, a poor imitation of Jeff Booth's wonderful book in, you know, one or two slides. And, you know, from that point, the societies have grown so big that they decide to elect a government. And so they elect a government on both sides, and it doesn't matter if it's left, right, big, small, whatever. It's tried to make this completely apolitical as far as I can, to make it appeal to as broad a base as possible. And then what happens is the government come along and they start to tax the population, do government spending in various forms, and inevitably they run into a deficit problem. And it doesn't matter where the deficit problem comes from, but you have a deficit problem. And then both sides of the island, you know, they're running in parallel. Effectively, both sides have to make a decision about what they're going to do. And Satoshi doesn't have any choice. Like, he has to raise taxes or cut spending. That's the only way to balance the budget because, you know, he can't change the money. Whereas Fiatello, he has a big red button and he's up for re-election, right? And so he just prints some extra money for the government, gets re-elected. Satoshi loses the election, you know, some people are made redundant, the economy becomes more efficient, but prices continue to fall and quality continues to increase. But Fiatello, he prints the money and he gets away with it because the population don't know. And then he thinks this is great. And then the next stage is, you know, things start happening in the economy. You know, he prints the money, debases the currency, and debasing the currency starts to distort the price signals in the market. You know, it increases the business costs, business input costs, which starts to lead to consumer price inflation in various forms. It leads to the reduction in quality of goods because businesses are trying to cut down the quality to keep the price the same. It leads to shrinkflation, at least the increasing of prices for some decisions, which reduces overall affordability for the population and undermines the health at the same time, because now the food is having to be produced with lower and lower ingredients. It creates a health crisis. You know, it leads to reduced affordability combined with asset price inflation. So the people who own the assets, they see the benefits. The poor and who don't own the assets get left behind. The banks start pushing greater leverage. You know, everyone's now taking speculative risk because assets never go down in price. More leverage in the system. People can't afford to buy a house because they got less take-home money. The assets are more expensive and they're already more leveraged. So now both parents have to start working. There's fewer children. There's greater breakdown of the nuclear family, greater levels of hopelessness and addiction. You know, it tries to walk through all of these things which come as a consequence purely of the money printer, like naturally walking through these things. And at each stage, it requires more and more government intervention to deal with them. And so the government has to start pumping more money back into the economy to deal with these secondary issues, further distorting the price signals and sucking the productive people away from delivering efficiency within the economy and making it even more unproductive. And then he realizes, Fiatello, that the only way to solve these new holes that he's created is just to hit the printer button again. I just print more and more money, more and more money. And it's just the solution over and over again. So it just goes round and round and round. And then it leads to the next stage where he's no longer operating in free market capitalism anymore. He's created crony corporatism, where he now has a set of industries attached to the government who are all trying to deal with these secondary issues that he's created through the money printer. And he now becomes protective of those industries over the population. And he starts to embed the relationships with these corporate entities very, very close to the government. So the population can't really tell where the government ends anymore and these corporates begin. And it really cements the destruction of the societal balance. It creates the forever wars and the pharmaceutical industry and the, you know, the growth of Wall Street and all of these sorts of things. And then it sort of spirals out of control. And, you know, he gets to the point where he's just having to constantly press the big red button because it's the only way out. And he's trying to balance social cohesion, really. And then so, you know, we end up with a picture of, you know, a world that looks very much like today. And so people go, okay, well, I recognize that. I recognize this. I recognize that. Now I have a framework for where these things came from, right? Without us having to say, you know, it's because of the Fed or, you know, it's because of these things, because it's done in a nice way within a story. You know, obviously there's a lot of detail which is abstracted away around like how money is created and all of these sorts of things, but those are the levels of detail people will get to when they start wanting to read about, you know, the underlying mechanisms for these things. But then, you know, it sort of draw it back together, because then Fiatello is now in this world where he has all these issues, and then the wall starts to crack down the middle of the island. And so, you know, on Satoshi's side, he's got this free market, you know, with a money that's accruing in value and the quality of life is lifting for everybody. And on the other side, you've got a world that looks very much like today, but then the wall starts cracking. And for the first time, people and money can move between the two. And it becomes very obvious to the viewers, like, what's going to happen when that wall starts cracking. People are going to try and leave the Atello side of the island to go to Satoshi's side of the island. I mean, it's just obvious. If my money is becoming higher, is having higher purchasing power year over year in Satoshis, and I'm losing money hand over fist in purchasing power in Fiatellos, why on earth would I want Fiatellos? And just this realization is just so clear, it hits people in the face. And so what starts to happen is people and money leave Fiatello's side of the island, and then Fiatello is having to think, okay, well, I can't just print more money because that doesn't solve it. I've now got to do something else. And that something else is to change another aspect of the money. So I'm going to remove the censorship-resistant nature of it. I'm going to force everyone to put it in the banks. They can't just hold it themselves anymore. They've got to put it in the banks. And I'm going to centralize it all, and I'm going to make the banks protect everybody. Check all the transactions and effectively introduce the capital controls by the back door and greater levels of population control, which looks even more like today. Right. And so, it then sort of spirals a bit further out of control. And then I take people through what the impacts of that are for the various people within society. So, the poor, the middle earners, the wealthy, and then the politically connected. I sort of draw that distinction around, all these groups are impacted, but impacted in slightly different ways, but all negatively. It's just a question of magnitude. And the only people who are not negatively impacted here are the politically connected, because they're the ones benefiting from the money printer. And so, it goes from there to thinking about, like, what's the end game for Fiatello? Because, the only thing you can do is press the big red button. And so, the end game is, inflation bordering on hyperinflation. It's asset seizures. Now everything's in the banks. He's going to have to bail everybody in. And you can do that whenever. And, we've seen that in Cyprus in 2013. We've seen that in the US effectively in 1933 with the gold. It's communism. Because people don't understand what's happened. They see society has deteriorated all around them. And at every stage, the solution has been, the government has to fix this. There's more and more problems the government has created. And therefore, at every stage, the solution has always been more government. And because the government don't explain where these new issues came from, they don't explain that it came from the money printer by first order, second order, third order effects. The population don't know. And so they walk into communism, which is just the absolute opposite of what you should be doing. Like, the failure of the system is blamed on the failure of capitalism, which is the absolute opposite of what it is. It's the corruption of capitalism which has led to the issues. And, we see this all around ourselves today. Or potentially, something even more destructive. And then I sort of bring them back to, like, now we've gone from idyllic islands on two sides to idyllic island on one side and one side absolutely destroyed. And take them back to those seven characteristics of money. It's like he only changed two of them. The seven perfect seven characteristics of perfect money. He only changed the fixed supply and the censorship resistant. And look at what happened, right? And at this point, people are very much connected Fiatello's side of the island to today's world in their minds, as well as understanding, getting some level of familiarity with some of the nomenclature, like Satoshis versus fiat, et cetera, as we go through. And then the reveal is that, it's very clear Fiatellos are terrible. Very clear. Like, why would you ever want Fiatellos rather than Satoshis? And then the reveal is, well, the US dollar is just a terrible version of the Fiatello. Right? Because it's corrupted on these two same measures, but it's worse on the other five as well. Portability, divisibility, all these other things. And, fungibility is one. I touch on CBDCs in there. You know, a dollar is a dollar for now, but you know, in many parts of the world, that's no longer the case, right? And then it's sort of explaining what happens with, you know, the history of debt and the debasement of the dollar with the charts, especially since 1971, and effectively that the money printer is just destroying the productivity for everybody and the purchasing power for everyone. And that it's all, you know, it's fairly depressing, but you get to the realization, right, I understand where this came from now, but I didn't understand the magnitude of this issue. You know, with 36 trillion in debt, losing 2 trillion a year, and 200 trillion of unfunded liabilities. I mean, that's a pretty shocking hole to be in. And that's the best one. You know, and then I show all the percentage changes versus the dollar over 10 years for every other currency, and it's a total disaster. Then you take the dollar over everything. You know, some currencies have ceased to exist completely. And so, you know, when you realize that at every slide, the situation is actually getting even worse than you thought it was before, but you've already made the mental decision that you never even wanted via teller, and that's now looking much better than where we are today. It just transports people to a much more open-minded place to be like, okay, I never really realized it was this bad, and I never knew where these issues came from, right? But now I have this mental framework. And then the final reveal is, okay, this is all really bad, but there is a solution. And the good news is Satoshis are real. Right. And that you should learn about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that's it.
How many individuals have you shocked giving this presentation in person?
I gave it to 15 people in Portugal. I have given it to maybe 30 others in small groups, 1 to 5. And then I was very kindly invited to a mini Bitcoin conference in Bristol in the UK, which is about 80 Bitcoiners. They amazingly allowed me to get up on stage with a microphone in my hand, having sort of took a bit of a punt on me. But that went amazingly well. And you know, nothing but kind words from the Bitcoiners, and you know, really excited to get the video. And so, it's great. I'm so happy it's out there. But Marty, I can't explain to you how there's one slide in particular, which is that flowchart slide about, you know, the money printer to this, and the number of people at the end of that slide say, oh my God, I never knew this. I never knew this. Everybody should see this. Right. It blows my mind. And so, yeah, I would just love everybody to watch it. All Bitcoiners to watch it just once, 35 minutes each time, and then send it to everyone you care about. And I would really love it for Bitcoins to have in their mind as like the first gentle touch point for Bitcoin. You send this to people, they will then ask you to send them something else. Because they'll want to learn about it, rather than bashing them over the head, which is what we normally do, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, it's something I've been taking a lot of introspection on recently, particularly because of an episode I recorded about a month ago with these two guys that run a podcast, War Mode, and there are two blue collar guys that stumbled into the podcasting world, stumbled into some success with it, but they still paint houses and operate trash trucks in the Philadelphia area. And I think it was humbling to me sitting there having the conversation. We just essentially did a collaborative episode where it was, all right, you guys come on TFTC and you ask us all your Bitcoin questions that you think are stupid, and there's no stupid questions, just ask them. And the concept of of inflation was completely, they could not connect it to the money printer for whatever reason. And through that conversation, ultimately at the end, I think it got through to them, but it reminded me that most people, I mean, it's been used time and time again, this analogy, but like the fish in water, they don't understand that the water they're swimming in is toxic to an extent because of the money printer and this flow chart that exists and it affects everything. And I think telling a story around this is incredibly impactful because people need to have that moment where they're shaken up and said, yeah, this is the problem. These problems that we all know exist and can feel inherently do have a root cause at the center, which is this red button that the government and the central banks keep hitting. And that's the nefarious thing about it too, is they keep hitting it and keep saying that you have to come back to them like fiat tello, like, no, I'll solve your problems. We're going to hit the button. We're going to do all these things. We're going to make things better this time. I promise this time we're going to figure it out. And the solution is simply to remove the red button from the equation entirely.
Exactly. The only solution is the separation of money and state. The government cannot be allowed to have a big red button. That's it. And you know, as a message to people, that is much more accessible than trying to explain about the Fed and what happened on Jekyll Island and all of these things. It's like, we can get to that level of detail if people want to drill down to that level of detail. But if we can give them a narrative, an accurate narrative, on which they can sort of hang their mental model, it just makes it much more accessible, I think. You know, the visual of the big red button and Fiatello just pressing this in the background whenever he needs to is like quite a powerful way of thinking about it for these people. But the thing is, half the time, the population don't even know he's pressing it, which makes it even worse. Because he's pressing it in the dark room, and then when the effects are coming out, he's pointing at everybody else, saying it's because of the greedy businessmen, or it's because of that, the billionaires or that foreign dictator. You know, that's where the inflation is coming from, not from this thing I've got behind me in the dark.
I'm having flashbacks to Neil Kashkari. There's unlimited cash at the Federal Reserve. And then Jerome Powell at the same time asks, how do you actually create money? We hit a button. We digitally create it. He literally said we hit a button.
Yeah, we print it digitally. Yeah, I mean, those two snippets. There was a version of this presentation. I actually had those two snippets in this presentation. But then I ended up taking it out because I thought, it's... it probably delves a bit too far into reality for people. I end up taking them out again, but you know, those are shocking things. They are absolutely shocking things to say. But people don't necessarily connect the magnitude of those comments to their own reality, which I think. If they end up seeing those things after they've seen this presentation, they'll understand, how insidious that is.
Yeah, I agree. It's an incredible presentation. Thank you. Thank you for making it and hopping on to record this so quickly today. So I think it's important to get the word out there, especially as we head into 2025 and things seem like they're going to heat up. I mean, the price is already bouncing right below and above 100,000, and I imagine if things go the way they have in last cycles in terms of adoption waves and people's curiosity about Bitcoin, it's about to increase significantly, and it's important that they have really valuable and credible and easy to understand and grok resources at their fingertips. And so I think the timing of you launching this on January 7th, 2025, couldn't be better.
Well, I can't take any credit for the timing other than just, it's by chance, but I'm glad it's working out. The Bitcoin's going through this supercharged legitimacy enhancing phase, I think, at the moment, and that it may go on steroids in 2 weeks' time when the new administration comes in. You know, it's sort of the social stigma of being associated with Bitcoin is gone. It's now turning into, the, I think, the opposite increasingly. You know, if you're not thinking about this for yourself, for your company, for your country, you are at risk of being left behind. And, you know, especially with the, you know, MicroStrategy, MicroStrategy have done a tremendous job of raising the profile of Bitcoin from a, you know, a company perspective. But at some point, it does tip to being a, you are obligated to be thinking about this and planning for a Bitcoin future. Otherwise, you're not fulfilling your fiduciary duties. And it, the same applies to, you know, increasingly you as individuals. Right. Especially when you start seeing legitimacy coming down from above. You know, we've gone from individuals holding it almost straight to nation states. And now we're sort of filling the gap in the middle. Right. And when you, when your government turns around and says the government's buying Bitcoin, that is a stamp of legitimacy for the uninformed population. That Bitcoin is no longer this, no longer for the criminals or, you know, whatever they previously labeled it as. So I hope over 2025, we end up seeing, you know, a much broader segment of the population being receptive and actively wanting to learn about Bitcoin. And for anybody who shows any inkling of openness, I would love them to see this presentation, and then hopefully we can send them a whole ream of additional content to get them up the curve as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And that's another call to action I would throw out there is if you're somebody who's mad at the state of the world, you're mad that your grocery bill is increasing month on month, it's getting harder to pay the rent at the end of the month, to pay your mortgage, you're going into credit card debt, your medical bills are racking up, and you feel like the quality of the goods and services that you're being provided to the market are going down, and you're out there blaming the government or big corporations for these problems, as Joe has pointed out and described incredibly well in his presentation. What's the problem? It's the money at the root of all these problems. And I think due to the legitimacy that has been given to Bitcoin, that Joe just explained, the stamp of approval from the governments, and the fact that Bitcoin is 16 years old now and is not going to die. If you think it's going to die, you are wrong. And more importantly, it has all the seven properties of good money. I think most importantly that it's open source, transparent, and anybody can participate. And so as it stands today in 2025, if you are complaining about all these things and looking to the government or some other actor to solve these problems, you have the ability and the agency to solve this problem yourself by simply adopting the better money Satoshis. And I think, I don't want to browbeat anybody, but I think you should seriously consider watching this presentation if you're new to Bitcoin, to understand the problem, and more importantly, understand that you yourself can take action to solve this problem for yourself as an individual, and collectively, if enough individuals take action to solve their individual problems, society will benefit in the long run. And I truly believe that more and more people are going to wake up to this and are waking up to this. And the question is just how quickly are they going to adopt and take the agency to make the change so that we can fix all these problems that are laid out in the flowchart in the What's the Problem presentation, because they are massive, as we described earlier. They have led to a lower quality of life and a lot of social incohesion, desperation, despair, and it's not a state that humanity should be in. We have incredible resources at our fingertips. We just need to fix the core of the problem, which is the money.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we are very fortunate, Marty, to live in countries in the West where you know, we do suffer from these problems, but the extent to which we suffer from them pales in comparison to those around the rest of the world. And, you know, the US in particular now is in such a good position. In the next few weeks, for the backdrop for the embracing of Bitcoin and the harnessing of all the good things that will come from embracing Bitcoin, it really is the envy of the rest of the world at the moment.
Yeah. Well, Joe, hopefully this is the first of many. Hopefully the next time we record, I've got a proper mic and set up and I'm not next to a busy street in the middle of the jungle with motorcycles driving by. But I think this was a great conversation. I'm pumped that we were able to connect today, and thank you for making What's the Problem. Where can anybody who's listening, we're going to link to it in the show notes, but beyond finding that link and sharing it, what else do you think people who are listening to this should do?
Well, you can find it on YouTube. I've also created a website where it's embedded at satsvsfiat.com, satsvsfiat.com. And so if you are just getting started with wanting to learn about Bitcoin, then you can go and stick your email address in there and you'll get sent some starter material on Bitcoin to help you get up the curve. This is, Martin, I should say, this is not in any way a commercial thing for me. This is a charitable, educational thing. And so I just want as many people as possible to see this. As I said, it's an accidental creation. It's not my main area of focus. But you can follow with the same handle on X, and you know, connect with me as well if you like. And my handle is SatMojo, which hopefully we'll also put in the show notes on X. You know, I've been somebody in the background for a while, but I'm always happy to connect with people, and hopefully can focus on building more great stuff for Bitcoin.
Awesome. Joe, keep crushing it. Thank you for coming on, and we'll do this again at some point. Like I said, better setup on my end.
Yeah, well, thank you ever so much for having me, Marty. It's a pleasure, and you know, I never thought I'd be on this podcast, so thank you for having me.
The first time. You're going to be on again. That's all we got today, Freaks. Peace and love.
All right.